You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we'll be doing Primal Scream, Screamadelica. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey, buddy.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Woo!
Woo!
And Kyle.
Sleepadelica.
Screamadelica is the third studio album by Scottish rock band Primal Scream. It was first released on the 23rd of September, 1991 in the United Kingdom by Creation Records. And on 8th of October, 1991, in the United States by Sire Records. The producer was Andrew Weatherall and Hugo Nicholson and Orb, Hypnotone, Jimmy Miller, and the genre is alternative rock, alternative dance, neo-psychedelic, Manchester dance rock. I'm going to read from All Music Reviews, Stephen Thomas Irwin. There's no overestimating the importance of Screamadelica, the record that brought acid house, techno, and rave culture crashing into the British mainstream, an impact that rivaled that of Nirvana's Nevermind, the other 1991 release that changed rock. Prior to Screamadelica, Primal Scream were stonesy, classic rock revivalists with a penchant for Detroit rock. They retained those fascinations on Screamadelica. One listen to the Jimmy Miller produced Stephen Stills rip Move On Up proves that, but they burst everything wide open here, turning rock inside out by marrying it to a gleeful rainbow of modern dance textures. This is such a brilliant, gutsy, innovative record, so unlike anything the Scream did before, that it's a little wonder that there had been much debate behind who is actually responsible for its grooves, especially since Andrew Weatherall is credited with production with 8 of the tracks, and is clearly in line with his work. Even if Primal Scream took credit for Weatherall's endeavors, that doesn't erase the fact that they shepherded this album, proving the ideas and impetus for this dubtastic, elastic, psychedelic exercise in deep house and neo-psychedelic. Like any dance music, it is tied to its era a certain extent, but it transcends it due to its fierce imagination how it doubles back on rock history, making the past present and vice versa. It was such a monumental leap forward that Primal Scream stumbled before regaining their footing. But by that point, the innovations of Screamadelica had been absorbed by everyone from the underground to mainstream. There's little chance that the record will still be as revolutionary to first-time listeners, but after its initial spin, the genius in its construction will become apparent, and it's that attention to detail that marks Screamadelica an album that transcends its time and influence. All right, what do we think of Primal Scream?
I think that write-up makes some pretty bold claims.
It does.
Short hair don't care.
Okay.
I went back and forth on this record. There's a lot that I like, but I also, you know, I'm not in 1991 going Madchester, you know, like taking ecstasy. I imagine if I were. Look, I've done cool things in my life. This record, I struggled to get through it.
Okay.
It starts off real strong.
With the sympathy for George Michael song?
It does, yeah, start off with a very amalgamated fist-pumping UK anthem.
Yeah.
The later stuff, I didn't mind. It's great. It's fine. It's well-produced.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably my fault. Look, listen, everybody. We're in the doldrums of January. This is an extremely long record. I didn't have any drugs. I listened to it. I did some chores. I did some reading. It's fine. It's great. Hey, Brian Eno.
Yep.
Little Brian Eno shades on this record.
Okay.
Great. But by the end, I was just like, stop. Stop it. You start off with these anthems, these party rock anthems. And then you just kind of get into, I don't know. I sure wish I had some mushrooms. I wish I had the day off.
I could go the rest of my days without hearing the
okay.
Bongo.
Really? Because I was into that. Bongo. That's a vibe.
Bongo. Like, whatever. I don't want to.
Ibiza beats or.
Is it a groove?
Yeah.
That makes me just want to fucking like rip my fucking ears off.
It's like the Manchester and yeah.
It's just ugh. Like I'm gonna wax dickhead and I apologize.
I'm ready for this.
I'm just about to wax a different flavor of dickhead, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's just I know what we've been covering. I know what the future holds, and this is again we talked about KLF last week, and
that
record like seemed like a real nice nail in the coffin for. A nice send off to like, hey, it's the send off to the dance thing. And like the combination of that Manchester thing with rock and roll, it just doesn't gel for me. Like
it doesn't gel for me either, Rob.
It is the rap rock of
interesting
of the dance guitar stuff. And yeah,
I respect your weird opinion.
The intro was, man, I don't know. It was glowing. Making some glowing, to say the least.
Yeah, and I'm that is Stephen Thomas Erwine, the creator of all music. Board. You know, he does the big reviews. And but
this podcast project we've been doing is really the start and finish of my knowledge of the baggy scene. Mm-hmm. You know,
may it rest in piss.
But Stephen Thomas Erwine calling this album the one that took the dance, the house grooves into the rock scene, wouldn't that be Happy Mondays?
No, that would have been George Michael.
Mondays. You too.
No, you're right. Happy Mondays is, I feel like, is right there for sure. No, I wouldn't say
Stone Roses even. You know.
Yeah.
Like, why Primal Scream? Like, we've heard so much of this shit, so why this one?
Well, I think they're right in line there. Those other groups were mentioned.
Because we're not blokes.
Heavily.
Because we're not blokes.
With Primal Scream. I think.
But weren't they first?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. But.
To bring it into the mainstream.
No. Stone Roses was going for the 60s rock revival, you know, psychedelic. Element. Did they have some songs that maybe you could dance to? Yes, but they were.
They've got a guy that just plays maracas poorly.
Yeah, but they're also one record band.
Yeah, no, you're talking about the Happy Mondays. I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, that's Happy Monday.
Happy Mondays. You would be right to say, okay, those guys. They went to Spain. They were picking up on the dance scene there. They incorporated those loops and that sort of thing into their rock sound. However. That's still, in my mind, that's still a rock band that is playing repeated riffs, whereas this is a fully integrated half of it. They've created these songs using a rock band, and then they've handed it over to someone else to say, here.
Isn't that what the Mondays did with Oakenfold?
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah, Oakenfold did that.
Like this thing has been done.
Yeah.
I know shit. I know very little shit about the baggy scene, but I feel like this has been already covered.
Yeah, I guess this is just the different flavor, though. I mean,
cool, more flavors of baggy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, be respectful.
I wasn't as harsh on this album. I did have some mixed feelings when I started. I was a little like, what is this? What are they doing here? Like, what is actually happening? And how does this like fit in here? And at first I was like, yeah, this really isn't doing it for me, especially this song we're listening to right now, which is
Don't Fight It, Feel It.
Don't Fight It, Feel It. I was like, really? What is, I don't know about this. Higher Than the Sun is pretty good. I actually kind of like the come down element of the record, like the ending part.
Thanks for bringing that up first.
Down.
Yeah, it's more melodic.
I was a little fussy about it, but yeah.
And it has more introspective, and it has more like a... that kind of classic rock feel that doesn't lean so hard. I don't think they do dance as well as they think they do.
It has the introspective morning after.
Yeah.
I like the back half of this album. Like from track 7 Loaded, all through Loaded to Damage to I'm Coming Down to the dub version of Higher Than the Sun, which is fucking dope.
Yep.
To Shine Like Stars. Like I like
Are into that dub?
I like side 2 of this record a lot.
Me too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I also like side 2 of that KLF one more than I liked side 1. I like the Come Down shit.
Yeah.
It's true.
More so than like the Mortal Kombat shit.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell's on our cans right now is not Mortal Kombat at all.
No, that was KLF.
Yeah, Don't Fight It, Feel It. But the Orb does Higher Than the Sun.
Yeah, so, the Orb is pretty dope.
So I thought, that's pretty good. But yeah, I like when they lean a little more into Stonesy group, like Stones meets Happy Mondays or something like that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good combo.
Yeah.
You know. This stuff's good, but you know, I'm not rolling.
Yeah, exactly. And I think
I was listening to it during lunch.
Kyle, you're our resident raver, so
yes,
you're the authority here.
Put the acid on my tongue.
that was very much what they were doing at the time. People were just throwing pills into their mouths.
And that isn't band.
That was like me at the gathering of the chuckles.
The album cover was created by Creation Records in-house artist Paul Cannell, and the album cover is his drawing of a damp water spot he saw on the wall of the Creation Records building after taking LSD.
Yes. I love that.
That could be profound.
And you can now buy that on a guitar for $1,300
for the low, low price.
You can get a handmade American Stratocaster with another band's logo plastered all over it for the low, low price of $1,300.
I know that we're trying to stop talking about gear. I know that, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Are we? I'm not.
Well, I've never.
How much? How much does a Rickenbacker bass cost in 2023?
Like a new one, or like a
yeah, a new one? A new one.
I don't know. $2,000.
In some place.
Probably $1,500, $1,600.
Okay.
Yeah, depending on what it is.
I remember 20 years ago it was like $1,300. So
that's probably a little bit more with inflation.
Except the inflation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody sell me a Rickenbacker bass.
I'm not gonna.
I don't even know.
Have you tried talking to
$100?
Scott Pilgrim's got a lightly damaged Rickenbacker bass that
I'll fight him.
I wouldn't fight him.
I'll fight him and all of his exes.
So it said they started force feeding the pills. Quote, McGee was literally a big bag. Open your mouth. Open your mouth. Gillespie remembers, and they started getting into it. Literally just feeding the band pills of ecstasy.
It was Malcolm McLaurin, wasn't it?
I know that Creation Records, they were on financial thin ice when My Bloody Valentine was taking so much time and money to record Loveless. But by the end of 1991, they've got to be rolling, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got Loveless. They've got Screamadelica. They've got Bandwagon-esque all coming out the same year for this small Scottish label. Also, two of the three of them just making up words for their album titles. Loveless is an actual word. It's the other ones.
you wanted to talk about who it was? So I got a little quote here. It says, quote, I can remember seeing them at one of the early raves in Brighton. Recalls one former musician business figure. Everyone was off their heads, and Primal Scream were here at the side, and they didn't look very comfortable at all. By their own admission, the band was late to the party. Bands like Primal Scream didn't go to discos because they weren't rock and roll or punk in any way, but they could see the influence and the scene was having on McGee, and that didn't take them long to start enjoying the new drug that everyone was on. Annie's recalls the much heralded efforts of the new love drug, quote, you went from being out at some indie club where some drunken idiot would start trying to pick a fight with you to this incredible new sounding music and beautiful girls and everyone's being friendly. You'd bump into some football hooligan and think, oh God, here we go. And he'd give you a cuddle and that would be your new best friend for the night. But yeah, I mean, I think what they're saying, or what Stephen Thomas Erlewine is trying to convey with this, is that they took a band who was very, very in the vein of revivalist, you know, rock and rollers.
Yeah, it's like 60s jangle revival.
Yeah, whatever. Jaber, like Rolling Stones, like Detroit, you know, and they said, oh, they changed. Like they changed the game by doing this. Essentially, this album came out and it was a completely 180 from what everyone had probably considered.
Well, from what I read, like this was pretty much a kind of a straightforward rock record, and then they just handed it to people to chop it up and make it kind of a dance hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think we mentioned tonight, the frontman of Primal Scream, Bobby Gillespie, was the drummer for Jesus and Mary Chain. He left Jesus and Mary Chain to do this thing. And it sounds like their first few releases were like, okay, successful, but not really making any waves. So the band was looking to probably try something new anyway, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, let's take acid and give these tracks to Andrew Weatherall.
Yeah.
And then, oh, look, we're a house band. Yeah, that'll do it.
Let's all take a second to appreciate 1991 that we're going to go from this record to a fucking Black Album by Metallica.
1991 has been the gift that keeps on giving.
It's been a while.
It's been like since like 77 that we've had this killer of a year.
It's an explosion. Yeah. Everything we're getting is like cream of the crop.
Pretty surprising.
Just like hold on to this before we hit like 95.
Oh, like my goodness.
2000.
Yeah, I haven't revisited mid-late 90s stuff since the mid-late 90s for the most part. But even as a teenager, I remember thinking, this can't be the best that we've got, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember listening to X-103 and being like, things are getting worse.
Yeah, the band had written mostly with their guitars. The new material was based mainly on keyboard chords, while key to the creative process was the Akai S-1000 sampler. And they said, quote, that changed everything. And he's recalled, suddenly we could experiment. You're in a rock and roll band. You can take James Brown drum loop, play along with that. You add horns, you add strings. Engineer would give you a floppy disk and some tablas, and you'd stick that in the sampler, try that. And we've been painting in black and white, and suddenly we had a full palette of colors to play with.
Yeah.
So.
Well said.
Yeah. He's sticking tablas in the sampler?
Sure.
I don't think the sampler is designed to take tablas as an input, I think.
Oh, I think it is.
It's all kinds of inputs.
I know what you're doing. I was being dumb.
I was being dumb.
That's weird.
I'm sorry.
I'm calling you out on it.
I'm sorry, too.
Yeah. It sold over 3 million copies worldwide.
That's crazy.
Very big success.
Good for them.
People have heralded this as like a game changer in terms of, you know, totally mind-blowing, says Simon
Just
Reynolds.
Like fish and chips. Yeah.
Man, I don't dislike this, but my mind is so far from being blown. Like, my mind is not even on the blown runway.
I mean, 32 years later, like this doesn't hit the way I imagine it did in 91.
Absolutely.
Which has more to do with us and what we were experiencing that time than it does
with
how we are taking this in right now. Like, I see the influence. It's
absolutely,
it's everywhere. I mean, fucking Liam or Noel Gallagher, like, absolutely was copping this dude, like, for style wise. So it's there.
Just want to mention, Inner Flight is in our camps right now. It reminded me of Virgin Suicides by Air, and I was very pleased.
Yeah, I get that. I didn't make that connection, but I hear it absolutely.
Did you hear some Brian Eno, maybe? I heard some Brian Eno.
I did. I think it's an interesting record. I don't like all of it, but I think it has a lot going on that I think you guys are neglecting because we've been hanging out with Manchester bands for so long.
Yeah. We sure have been.
I think if this was on a month or two ago, you guys would be like, yeah, yeah, Let's get
no. That's a really good point, this, especially you know? When this is sandwiched between like fucking Pavement and Teenage Fan Club and Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll be the first. I've got baggy fatigue.
Okay.
No, it's.
I don't, and I was into this, but maybe I do. Yeah, halfway through, I was like looking at my watch. I was like, I want to hear some Sad Patrol.
It is the blessing and the curse of doing this chronologically. Sometimes the ears get fatigued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not going to, I won't deny that this is a good record.
Yeah.
And that it's very important. I'm just, I don't care.
Yeah.
Here's what I have to say to
Same.
The listeners. Mail me some ecstasy. And support me listening to this album again.
Kyle, would you like to stake your
and
address?
And I will record a new episode.
Okay.
I will name you, listener, gentle listener. Rob, did you get into the ecstasy?
Let's get out of here. We're in some sort of shame spiral right now, guys. Let's get out of here.
Speak for yourself.
Let's get out. I do think, though, that when I listen to this album, and you're right, it's coming right off of Massive Attack. You know, like, brilliant album.
Yeah.
And you're listening to this, and you're thinking, 808 State. You know, you're just like, huh, what are we doing? Come Together. This intro is just, there's also something about this album that is, it turns me off because it is like, look how druggy it is. You know, like, here we are. We're all taking drugs. It's very druggy. Ooh, did you get this? That's a reference to drugs? Yeah, yeah. No, it's literally kind of like self-referencing so hard that it takes me out of it.
Yeah.
It's that point where...
Hello, fellow kids.
If you need to point it out, you're doing it wrong. The self-reference of, get it? We're higher. We're high.
Yeah.
You know?
We just want to be loaded, old man. We want to be loaded. Have a good time. Let's get loaded.
Country Joe and the Fish no is whispering LSD. Like,
I think
I've been to more raves than any of you.
Kyle, you probably have.
I've been to zero.
Together.
Been a couple to a tree.
But NME named it druggiest album ever.
Druggiest album ever?
Druggiest album
ever? That is absolutely asinine.
I know. That's why I wanted to say it.
Can I introduce him to a little band called the Butthole Surfers?
Please.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I was going to say Lords of Acid.
There's a lot of really druggy bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cottonmouth Kings.
Fucking, yeah. Happy Mondays. Good God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think that's why I'm having a hard time with this is because I keep thinking...
Well, Jefferson like Starship.
I like the Happy Mondays album.
Yeah, it's great.
I like
the Happy Mondays album more than this one.
Yeah, I just don't know what is not clicking with this. Is it just the production? Is it the fact that they...
It's really long.
I would have loved to have heard what this was before they got it chopped.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... It's boring. It's boring. It's a boring beat that just permeates the entirety of the thing. I don't get me out of this air conditioned nightmare.
Yeah.
Nice. Give me a pink cigarette.
There's nothing druggier than an Edie Brickell sampled drum loop. Songs that I liked. I thought moving on up was cool, but again, I like the Rolling Stones.
I listened to the live version of this first.
Would you recommend it?
It's kind of fun. I mean, the audience kind of gets you a little more pumped up.
Slip Inside This House. Sounds like Happy Monday to me.
Is it a cover of ZZ Top's Slip Inside My Sleeping Bag?
No, it's track two on this album.
I have a little star next to that one.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Are we only 7 minutes in now?
No, we're fine.
Okay. Sorry, buddy.
Have we talked about Screamadelica for long enough yet?
Yeah, yeah. This will be a 10-minute episode.
Hey, you know.
There's a lot to like on this record.
Well, tell us about it, Kyle.
Guys, you're making Birch drink.
Birch Birch, get on this.
All you guys need to do is tell me some songs. Tell me about the recording.
Birch,
tell me about the mixing.
So Andrew Weatherall and Gillespie bonded over their love of Thin Lizzy, dub reggae, Mott the Hoople, and disco. I like that. I like that a lot. I wish I heard a little bit more Thin Lizzy and Mott the Hoople in this recording, though.
Yeah,
if that's what they bonded over.
Yeah,
I think you're right about that. It's losing me. I think it's right in the middle, which I understand is the concept is to be right in the middle of rock and roll and dance, but somehow I don't know if it's clicking.
I don't know. It clicks with a lot of people. Yeah.
And I think it does. When I kept coming back to this record, because this is the one I probably listened to the most, just to trying to get more and more into it, I did find new things, interesting things, but at the same time, I don't think I ever won me over in the way that I'm hearing about.
It's just tired. Like it.
I think it's infinitely boring.
Even the what track do we have in our cans right now?
Who even knows?
Come together.
I think. Yeah. So it's the boring, like it's a slowed down version of House 7 chords, like on a piano. The hand ding 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 ding, 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 okay. Like all that hand to hand shit. Ding, ding. It's a fucking slow, stupid bongo riff.
Mm-hmm.
If I went to a rave and this was playing, like all I can see is like a high school gymnasium where everyone's sitting on the on the sides and no one's dancing. Mm-hmm. Like this is not fun dance music.
I'd rather be listening to George Michael. Tell you that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. He knew how to do piano 7 chords.
Yeah. Just like the,
yeah.
I know what they're going for, and it may have been revolutionary in 1991. It's just not now. It's trite. Okay. is a word I would use to describe like what's in my cans.
Again, I did like Damaged, which was that kind of like slow, stonesy, bluesy guitar.
I like Damaged.
I'm Coming Down. Good. Higher Than the Sun, the dub version with Ja Wobble doing the bass thing, and Shine Like Stars.
That sounded like him. I didn't know that was him. Yeah.
Yep. So it kind of got me at the end. I was like, oh, coming around. I like this. And Moving On Up, man. starts really strong. I mean, it does.
I mean, I'm neutral, but I respect that my ears are coming at this with, 32 more years of listening than anyone who got into this right when it happened. I imagine this was a very exciting time, but I don't think it, to my ears, it hasn't aged that like that. So neutral, but important, important.
Yeah.
Same as Rob, neutral. I don't think it hits now like it must have hit back in the day, because what I'm hearing and experiencing on my first listens can't possibly be what the people who love this album heard and experienced on their first listens. The mixture of rock and house, I get that it's a thing. I prefer Happy Mondays to Primal Scream.
Yeah,
true.
Neutral.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I thought I was going to be the neutral one on this. I thought you guys were going to be like positive or negative. I don't know. Yeah, I could
it's
just
not
say
offensive. It's fine.
Yeah, I think I'll get positive, to tell you the truth. I think with more and more listens, I'll get there. But I think right now it's probably just neutral. Mm-hmm. Kyle?
I felt bad about saying neutral and hearing it again. No, it's neutral. It's neutral, bros. Like, it's fine. Hey, if you're rolling and you're rolling with the homies, put it on. You'll probably have a good time. If you're not, neutral.
Yeah.
Yep.
Neutral.
I will say it would help if it was if we were not doing a critical listen. We're just
I feel like that's important to say.
Yeah. You put it on the background. It's fine.
At a good party setting, sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's great.
You have a party, you need to come down a little bit.
Yeah, side two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next time we'll be talking about Teenage Fan Club, Bandwagon-esque. All right.
Woo!
Thanks, y'all. In my mind, beautiful, I live just for today, it's okay, back tomorrow.